Thanks for tuning in to the Lean 911 podcast, where you'll have a voice directly from the Gemba. I will rely on my three decades of Lean successes, as well as my failures, to answer your most challenging questions regarding your Lean transformation. I'm your host, Mark DeLuzio, President and CEO of Lean Horizons Consulting, and the principal architect of the Danaher Business System. Looking forward to your questions. Now, let's go to the Gemba. Hi, Mark DeLuzio. This is episode 35 of Lean 911. And the title of this particular episode, I think it's timely. It's called Destructive Lean Leadership. And what do I mean by that? Well, I guess I'm going to tell you. This is perhaps in response to so many different companies currently having layoffs and headcount, massive headcount reductions in their organizations. And right now I'm recording this on April 15th. Ironically, it's tax day, April 15th, 2024. And I continue to hear about companies laying off massive amounts of people. And ironically, it's so many of these people that are being asked to leave are in the continuous improvement spectrum of these companies. They're lean departments, they're continuous improvement people. And it's kind of mind-numbing to me that the people who are supposed to facilitate change and facilitate improvement are the ones being asked to leave. If you think about it for a minute, you've got to scratch your head about that. But let me get into this a little bit and try to diagnose, at least from where I'm sitting, what this looks like, because I've seen a lot of movies out there, seen a lot of companies. And, you know, my book Flatline kind of talks about the repeating problems that I see from time to time, company after company, industry after industry. It's agnostic in terms of industry, product, company, doesn't matter, geography. Seems like the same fundamental mistakes in leadership are being made. And so let's talk about this. Well, first of all, there's a whole notion out there that cost doesn't matter and that, this is not about cost reduction. I'm sorry, I'm going to disagree with that. It is about reducing cost, amongst other things. It's not the only goal. And I think if you think about my Lean trilogy, which you can find on my website, leanhorizons.com, download the white paper on that. It's in my book, called Flatline. We have to satisfy all shareholders. We have to satisfy our customers, our employees, maybe in this order, employees, customers, shareholders. And I know there's other constituencies that have to be considered, suppliers, the environment, community, so forth and so on, right? But those three, employees, customers, and shareholders, are really key. And we have to think about that. And what does that really mean, you know? So are we really satisfying the stakeholders in question? Or are we only looking at that bottom line? Okay, so, you know, I want to turn our attention to the fundamental principle of safety, quality, delivery, and cost. That's not a list. That is a hierarchy, with safety being the most important. And when I refer to safety, and I'll get to this a little bit later, I'm not only talking about physical safety, which most companies consider that to be. I'm considering psychological safety as well. More on that later. And then you got quality, delivery, and cost. Again, that's a hierarchy that you won't compromise one of those items for something higher on the totem pole. Okay. And I think I talk about that in a couple other podcasts that I've done or episodes that I've done. Now, it takes absolutely zero brilliance to lay people off. As a matter of fact, when we talk about the world of defects, We usually think about products and parts per million and all that. To me, a massive layoff in a company is a sign of a defect of leadership. And I do want to talk more about that, and I will get to that a little bit towards the end of this episode. But let's talk about cost for a minute. How do we get cost reduction? I've done a number of episodes that talked about leading and lagging indicators. Usually cost and profits are a lagging indicator to doing the right things. So let's talk about process, right? If I'm working on the right things in terms of safety, quality, delivery, and cost, I am going to drive cost. It's the last one on the totem pole, which drives your profits. And good performance in terms of quality and lead time and delivery drive profitable growth. And I talk about this in a number of episodes when I talk about even a commodity business. You can grow the business and even get price for it if you're superior to your competition in lead time and on-time delivery to their request date and in quality in particular. As a matter of fact, quality, because it is higher on the totem pole, drives lead time and on-time delivery. How many times have you missed a delivery simply because the quality wasn't there and your lead times are too long, et cetera, right? So most companies, however, are focusing on a mantra of cost, 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 cost. Now, I don't care what the posters say that they put up on their factory walls or in their office. They may say safety, quality, delivery, and cost, but they really are operating with a cost mindset. And again, I want to go back to leading and lagging indicators. You cannot lose weight by just looking at the pounds on a scale. You have to be looking at the leading indicators, the process of exercise, of nutrition, calories, how much sleep do you get, your alcohol intake, all that stuff. Control those variables and you will get the weight down on your scale. You can't just lose weight by looking at the scale on a day-to-day basis. Well, that's exactly what a lot of these leaders do, especially in the financial department. I'm an ex-finance guy. I'm very critical of the finance world out there today because they usually are the number one reason why lean transformations fail, along with ill-informed leadership that don't really understand how this is all supposed to work. Now, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of good leaders out there too, okay? I'm not trying to paint everybody with the same brush. But at the end of the day, if we're not focused on the process that delivers us the results, we're never going to get what we want. And we'll make some tyrannical, low-resolution moves like, hey, let's just lay off a bunch of people. Some of these companies out there have laid off tens of thousands of people over the course of time. Many of these come in with, you know, notices right before Christmas. Well, Merry Christmas. That's a nice Christmas present, right? So we have to think about how do we drive this and how do we prevent this from happening? Well, it starts with leadership. And, you know, the cost of poor quality is something I talk a lot about. I think I have an episode on this. And it's number two on the list, although you can argue safety is a reflection of quality as well. But quality drives all kinds of things in your business, right? And if your company arguably is a Three Sigma level company in terms of performance, it's been noted that you would be spending 20 to 30% of your revenues, not of your costs, but of your revenues that hit the bottom line on cost of poor quality. And there's some 90 plus categories that I talk about, and I'll be happy to send you my presentation on cost of poor quality. If you just email me at the end of this program, I'll give you the email and I'll be happy to send that presentation to you. There are over 90 categories of cost that go into cost of poor quality. Many of those are hidden factories within your company. A lot of rework that goes on. That's just part of somebody's daily job. It's what they do, right? But we don't look at focusing on the processes that drive that, okay? So I want to read four or five quotes from Deming that support exactly what it is that I'm saying, okay? And this is all going to get back to this whole reduction in force and the psychological safety in a minute. But let me read this. The first quote I want to read from Deming is, the biggest cost of poor quality, remember I told you there are over 90 categories, the biggest cost of poor quality is when your customer buys it from somebody else because they don't like yours. And many times, unless you're dealing with big government contracts or OEMs, you don't even know those customers went away because they don't call you and tell you. They just go away. That's the biggest cost of poor quality. And by the way, as a customer, you cannot think about quality in terms of just product quality. If you're not delivering on time, if you have lousy customer service, if you have a phone mail jail system when they call in for it with a problem, okay, I call that phone mail jail, they're viewing you as a bad quality supplier, regardless of how you categorize quality. If your delivery is bad, if your lead times are long, they would say you're a bad quality supplier. So you have to define quality a little bit differently in the eyes of the customer. And you have to ask yourself, what is a defect? How do you define a defect in your company? All right. And there are many ways to think about that. And I think I may do an episode on just that very question. Right. Second quote from Deming. Organizations that focused on improving quality would automatically reduce costs. That comes right from Dr. Edwards W. Deming, the guru of quality. Him and Duran, gurus of quality. So let me read that again. Organizations that focus on improving quality would automatically reduce costs, while those companies that focused on reducing cost, which most companies do, would automatically reduce quality and actually increase costs as a result. So think about that now. You focus on cost. That's like me focusing on the scale when I want to lose weight, and your costs actually go up because you didn't work on the right things. You didn't work on process. You didn't work on quality. So what happens next? The knee-jerk reaction? I'm going to lay a bunch of people off. That's how we're going to get a cost down. Okay? That's the second quote. The third quote. I should estimate that, in my experience, most troubles and most possibilities for improvement add up to the proportion something like this. 94% belongs to the system response. The system, which is the responsibility of management, and 6% to just people. Okay. So he's saying basically management, leadership, is in charge of assuring good processes in which we can succeed, which also means you have to provide the framework for doing Kaizen, for training your people. Training's a big deal. A lot of people don't see the value in training. And that's one of my 10 rules of a process. And I'd be happy to send that to you as well. And again, at the end of this episode, I'll be happy to give you my email and you can ask for that and I'll send it to you. I have my 10 rules of a process. And one of those rules is you must consistently train your people, okay, on an ongoing basis. Okay, so that's the third one. Number four. If you can't describe what you're doing as a process, you don't know what you're doing. So I want to ask you, look around you in your job and your work. Can you actually describe all the things that you do as a process? You know, and my first rule of my 10 rules of a process is that if it's not documented, you're not allowed to call it a process. Simple as that. Remember what Ono said. Ono said, there can be no improvement without a standard. Okay? Otherwise, what are you improving? Something that's in your mind? Something that's in Charlie's mind or in Mary's mind? Well, good luck with that. Okay? What actually are you improving? So take a look at what you're doing. Look at your business. Look at your fundamental functions and ask yourself, you know, can you really identify a process? My simple litmus test is, can you email that process to me? However you decide to document it, can it be emailed to me? Well, we don't really have it documented. We kind of know because we're sales guys. We know how to do cross-value selling. That's natural to us because we're just sales guys. Well, I didn't realize you were born with this out of the womb. Gee, that's pretty good. You know, I seem to remember I couldn't do anything out of the womb. Man, back then, I don't remember at all. But the point I'm trying to get at here is he goes back to process again. Okay. And last but not least, the fifth of many quotes that Demi has made over the years, 85% of the reasons for failure are deficiencies in the systems and processes rather than the employee. The role of management is to change the process rather than badgering individuals to do better. I've seen this so many times. Our people aren't getting it, man. They're not making the changes. Well, geez, they're working 60 hours a week. You haven't provided them any time to do Kaizen. And there's an episode I've done is Whatever Happened to Kaizen. That's one of my earlier episodes. No time. No, I'm going to go back to training again. No training. No facilitation. No resources. No training materials. And so forth and so on. One of the biggest disrespects to me is when leadership asks their people for results, but do not provide them with the framework, in other words, Kaizen, to get those results. All right, so that's Deming's view on it. And by the way, I agree with those. Now, I talked about quality, and I told you earlier that it's safety, quality, delivery, and cost. So, well, Mark, why don't you talk first about safety? Okay, I'm going to talk about safety now. I save the best for last, I guess. And if you think about safety, I want you to think more about safety in the terms of psychological safety than I do want you to think about physical safety. Although, if you have a psychological safety issue and there's a lot of stress, and all that, it will lead to physical safety issues, whether they're heart conditions, anxiety. I'm so wrapped up driving home, I missed that red light and got into an accident. I mean, there's all kinds of things. I go home and I bring home this negative energy to my family, which isn't healthy. Okay, so the psychological safety and the physical safety, in my view, are closely related, if not connected directly. Okay. So I think I want to close by asking the following five questions. And I'll let you guys answer these questions yourself. Okay. Number one, do leaders really welcome change? They all say they do. Or are they really welcoming better results, but don't want you to upset their apple cart? They don't want to be called, they want their baby to be called ugly. I've seen some crazy things over the years where leaders are claiming unbelievable statistics to shore up their resume and their promotable opportunities. And again, I'll call them watermelon KPIs, where they're red on the green on the outside and red on the inside. We delivered 95, 98% to the customer last year. To your promise date, yeah, and you're marked green. But because they're watermelon KPIs, the customer's marking you red. And oh yeah, by the way, those customers went away. Going back to one of Deming's earlier points, one of the biggest costs of poor quality is the customers that decide no longer to do business with you. Okay? So, do leaders really welcome change, or do they welcome results? Are they threatened by people who have a change type attitude? The type of people get attracted to these CI roles. And it's no mystery to me why so many of them are being asked to leave when there's a reduction in force, simply because they're probably threats to these leaders. Okay? Question number two, why are leaders reluctant to guarantee no layoffs to their workforce because of lean improvements? Why is that? And maybe a following question with that is, how in the world can they expect anybody to get engaged and be involved in improving their own work if they know they're going to lose their job? Think about it. And I've talked to operators about this. I'm not telling them, I know how to do this thing better, man, but if I do that, We got eight people in this department. If it goes down to five, I might be the guy that gets asked to leave. So they're going to work overtime, literally and figuratively, to make sure things don't go the way you think you want them to go. Okay? I can guarantee you that. I came out of a union shop at Jake Brake in Danaher, UAW. I negotiated two of their contracts. And these people could either be your friend or they can work against you. And that's all up to you. It's up to leadership. If they know and they don't trust you, and I do have an episode on trust, if they don't trust you, I can guarantee you they will always find ways to find that Saturday or that overtime hours that they're looking for or what have you. Okay, so how is it that leaders are reluctant to guarantee no layoffs because of lean improvements? Very few do. Okay. Number three, do leaders foster an environment where employees can voice their opinions, especially when they're different than those of leadership? Hey, I disagree with this. I think we should do it this way. I think we should do it that way. Okay. The further away you go from the work in your organization, up the hierarchy in the scale, the less the quality of the suggestions and the improvements. I did a whole episode on employee escalation, problem escalation, where why are we escalating problems when we say we want to solve the problems at the closest possible level to where the work gets done? And that our employees are our most valuable resource. They're our best consultants. They know the job better than anybody else. We're going to escalate a problem three levels up for some brilliant PhD to come down and tell the employees what to do? I mean, even if that PhD or that leader had the most unbelievable, elegant, perfect solution, it's going to get rejected because you didn't involve the people that do the work. This isn't that hard, people. This is not that hard. Why can't we get this? Why can't we understand this? So are employees free to voice their opinions? Are they free to challenge the status quo? Or are leaders afraid of looking bad because they're getting shown up by somebody that works for them? Are they really fostered in that environment where people feel psychologically free to voice their opinions? Okay. In many cases, I'd say no. Fourth question. When there's a reduction in force, and I alluded to this earlier, why is it that so many continuous improvement people are being let go in these reduction in force movements? How the heck can that be? If you really believe in lean, you want to add to that force to help you. But, you know, I think that's where the misunderstanding of what this is about and how to do it is evident whenever I see these massive layoffs. These leaders just don't understand how to drive improvement themselves. And in some cases, they may hire the wrong people. Okay, but I think that's more of a minor issue than it is anything else. Okay? So why are there so many CI people? Okay. And my last question is this. I want to go back to what Deming said. It's leadership's responsibility to create the process. It's leadership's responsibility to ensure the facilities are there and the framework is there to make improvements and all that stuff, right? So my question is this. They're the ones that presided over these, you know, these broken processes that did not deliver them results. How is it that they get to keep their jobs when everybody else is asked to leave? Okay. How is it that they get to keep their jobs? They're the ones that presided over this malaise, the poor financial performance. How is it that they don't get to go as well? Food for thought. Okay. That always bothered me. Okay. And I guess maybe another question you can ask, maybe this is question number six, is what truly is going to be different tomorrow? What truly is going to be different tomorrow? Because, you know, now that, you know, all these people are gone, the work hasn't changed. The work didn't go anywhere. It's now going to provide extra stress on the people that remain. And it's funny, you know, when I look at companies that say, well, we have a 35-40% attrition rate, and they're still using COVID as an excuse, okay? Yeah, the workplace changed, and people have different views now, and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but you haven't changed. Have you done anything to adjust your schedules or your pay scale for that matter, if you need to, okay? You know, guy leaves at $12 an hour and takes a job at 17, and now you got to replace somebody who doesn't know the job at 17, otherwise you're not going to get anybody, you know, that type of thing. You go down to Home Depot or Chick-fil-A and they're offering, you set your schedule, it's a flexible schedule policy. Some of these companies offer unbelievable tuition reimbursement, and you're going to tell me I got to come in every day at 7 o'clock, 5 days a week, with none of that stuff in a hot factory? Okay. I mean, so we're not thinking here, guys. And you can't look at some global macro reason why you have a high attrition rate. Maybe you have a high attrition rate because you're just not a good place to work. I hate to be that frank about it. And in some cases, I've seen that. Well, it's just not a good place to work. Okay. Anyway, I'll stop there. I'm talking about destructive, lean leadership. This was episode 35. And you'll notice in the title, I put the word leadership in quotes. Okay. And by the way, there are a lot of great leaders out there, and there are a lot of good people who really get it. Okay. But I get frustrated when I see good people be asked to leave because of mismanagement and, quite frankly, gross incompetence and negligence. That's how I look at it. Sorry, guys. I call it like it is. And love to hear your thoughts on this. And we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to the Lean 911 podcast. I'll be happy to address your questions or feedback on future episodes. Email me at mark@lean911.com. You can check out our other episodes by visiting our website at lean911.com, our YouTube channel, wherever you listen to podcasts. This is your host, Mark DeLuzio. Thanks for listening.